Today is Friday, April 10th, and this is the World Socialist Website.
Jacobin and the DSA sow complacency to demobilize opposition to war against Iran. The 2 days since Trump proclaimed a ceasefire have been characterized by continued violence in the Middle East, above all through Israel's massive bombardment of Lebanon and a deepening political crisis in the United States. Trump has paired his ceasefire announcement with open threats of renewed war against Iran, declaring Wednesday night that the U.S. military is loading up and resting for its next conquest. Under these conditions, the publication Jacobin, semi-official house organ of the Democratic Socialists of America and the Democratic Party, has responded with a series of articles whose central theme is, there is nothing to worry about and nothing needs to be done. The complacency of Ben Burgess's article is summed up in its headline, On Iran, Trump and the American Empire blinked. Burgess writes, Trump backed down. In doing so, he showed something that it's going to be important to remember next time hawks tell us some new war is going to be an easy victory. Even global military and economic juggernauts have their limits. Summing up his analysis, Burgess concludes that one of many reasons not to go around the world starting wars of choice is that sometimes you lose. Next time hawks try to promote some new American adventure overseas, ask them why they're so confident that it won't go like, well, this. This cynical and unserious language lays bare both the political orientation of the DSA and the conclusions that flow from it. Burgess is not addressing workers and young people seeking a way to oppose imperialist war through mass struggle. In fact, he is not speaking as an opponent of imperialism, but rather as an advocate of more effective imperialist policies and better planned wars. He is appealing to sections of the political establishment, urging them to draw more prudent conclusions from a military and strategic setback. This standpoint conforms entirely to that of the Democratic Party, which is never mentioned in what passes for Burgess's analysis. The Democrats entirely support the fundamental strategic aims of the war, even as they occasionally criticize Trump's rhetoric and methods. As Democratic Senator Chris Murphy told CNN on Wednesday, but if Iran has the Strait permanently now, then what? What an error. What a miscalculation this entire endeavor was. Bound up with the Democratic Party politics that determine Jacobin's policies, its central purpose is to demobilize opposition to war. Trump has suffered a debacle, therefore the danger has supposedly receded. It is certainly the case that American imperialism has suffered a major setback and catastrophically misjudged the resistance of the Iranian people. But the Trump administration's response will not be retreat, but escalation, greater violence abroad, and a deepening conspiracy for dictatorship at home. Burgess's treatment of Trump's genocidal threats is particularly revealing. He quotes Trump's social media post on Tuesday morning, "A whole civilization will die tonight, never to be brought back again. I don't want that to happen, but it probably will," but handles it with a joking flippancy, remarking that it would have sounded implausibly extreme if a comic book writer had put it in the speech bubble of a mad scientist or costume supervillain. The conclusion is one of utter complacency. If the war had been going better, he would have simply kept doing what he was doing. When it didn't, he resorted to the most outlandish threats he could think of. When that too failed, he agreed to negotiate on deeply humiliating terms. The thrust of this argument is that Trump's threat to annihilate Iran was merely outlandish and not in deadly earnest. Burgess makes this explicit when he writes, even the vast power of the world's dominant empire has limits. His initial genocidal bluster was itself downstream of this reality, as was his subsequent capitulation. Burgess ignores completely that by the time Trump made his threat, thousands of Iranians had been killed or wounded by American and Israeli missiles and bombs, and that much of the country's industrial and social infrastructure had been destroyed. In a rhetorical style that is typical of the middle-class political cynics and second-string Democratic Party operatives who actually run the DSA, the war is treated as if it was nothing more than a somewhat comic misadventure. Jacobin's dismissal of Trump's threat as genocidal bluster, that is, empty threats that won't be acted on, stands in contrast even to sections of the state itself. Retired General Barry McCaffrey, for example, noted that Trump's language amounted to code words for the use of nuclear weapons. Burgess, moreover, does not make the elementary point that threats and the war as a whole are a flagrant violation of international law. As the World Socialist website stated, Trump's threat is a historical watershed. His declaration that the United States is prepared to annihilate an entire civilization of more than 90 million people exposed the war's genocidal logic and laid bare the criminal character of the American state and its leaders. It shatters what remained of the myth that U.S. imperialism acts in defense of democracy or human rights. Such considerations are entirely foreign to the politics of Jacobin and the DSA, which are oriented entirely to the electoral fortunes of the Democratic Party and the prospects for political advancement and personal enrichment this affords. While Burgess says nothing about the Democratic Party, another article written by Branko Marcetic notes that some leading Democrats, including Murphy, have shifted overnight from denouncing Trump for advocating war crimes to attacking the ceasefire deal as a capitulation to Iran and effectively baiting Trump into restarting hostilities. Marcetic calls such criticism of Trump from the right distinctly unhelpful, but adds, thankfully, this is not the case with all Democrats, some of whom, like Representative Yasemin Ansari, favor sense and reason. He makes no mention of the DSA members in Congress, such as Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Greg Kassar, or those supported by the DSA, like Senator Bernie Sanders, who have focused their opposition to the Iran war on appealing to congressional Republicans to restrain Trump's actions. Now is the time for congressional Republicans to speak up, as Sanders put it in response to Trump's genocidal threats. While these left Democrats issue rhetorical criticisms of Trump's actions in Iran, they were in full support of the U.S.-NATO war against Russia and Ukraine, initiated by the Biden administration. Marcetic's own conclusion is, if anything, even more politically bankrupt than Burgess's. He states that the ceasefire is not really a victory for the forces of peace, but only a stunning defeat for militarism, and then argues that, to make any peace stick, we will all have to help Trump maintain the fiction that he won bigly. Making peace stick becomes a matter of pop psychology. If only Trump can be convinced that he won, the war will not be resumed. The central aim of the Democratic Party and the DSA is to prevent the emergence of a movement from below, which would not stop with opposition to Trump. The Democrats fear any genuine popular mobilization because it would immediately raise broader questions. The grotesque concentration of wealth, the dictatorship of the financial oligarchy, and the entire social order that both capitalist parties exist to defend. This is why, during the No Kings protests against Trump held on March 28th, they and their political affiliates deliberately downplayed the war against Iran. Those like Sanders, who did raise the question of the war, offered no way forward for the struggle except appeals to Congress and even to Trump himself. What is entirely absent from the Jacobin articles is any reference to the historical roots and fundamental driving forces of the war against Iran. There is not a word about the strategic interests of American imperialism, the long history of U.S. intervention in Iran under both Democrats and Republicans, or the connection between the assault on Iran and the expanding conflict with Russia and China. Neither article mentions oil, imperialism, capitalism, the ruling class, or the social forces represented by Trump. This omission expresses a definite class standpoint. Jacobin, speaking for the Democratic Party and the upper middle class milieu represented by the DSA, seeks above all to block the emergence of an independent movement of the working class against war and the capitalist interests from which it arises. Such a movement, Jacobin has stated elsewhere, constitutes sectarianism. The World Socialist website and the Socialist Equality Party fight for the building of a mass anti-war movement based on the independent political mobilization of the working class against the capitalist system, which is the root cause of war. Only the international working class has the social power to halt the imperialist war machine and prevent the present crisis, or the next one, from developing into a world war that would threaten civilization not only in Iran, but everywhere.
Israel continues to bomb Lebanon as U.S. media demands renewed onslaught against Iran. By Andre Damon. Israeli airstrikes killed at least 7 people in the town of Al-Abbasiyah in southern Lebanon on Thursday as the bombardment of the country entered its second day since the proclamation of a U.S.-Iran ceasefire. Thursday's strikes followed Wednesday's onslaught, the deadliest single day in Lebanon since the full-scale war began on March 2nd. The Israeli military deployed 50 fighter jets that dropped 160 munitions across more than 100 sites in 10 minutes, destroying residential buildings, shops, and offices from central Beirut to the southern suburbs. At least 303 people were killed and more than 1,150 wounded, including children. Several strikes hit busy neighborhoods during rush hour without prior warning. Lebanon declared a national day of mourning. At a mosque in the capital, funeral prayers were held, while tented settlements for the internally displaced stood across the street. The massacre came less than 24 hours after U.S. President Donald Trump announced a 2-week ceasefire with Iran. The deal was brokered by Pakistan, while Pakistani Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif made the announcement Tuesday evening. He said the ceasefire covered, quote, everywhere, including Lebanon, end quote. Hours later, Trump and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu declared that Lebanon was not covered by the deal. Trump dismissed the war in Lebanon as, quote, a separate skirmish, end quote. The latest attack on Lebanon is part of a U.S.-Israeli onslaught across the Middle East that has used the October 7, 2023 attack by Hamas as a pretext for war on a regional scale. Since October 2023, the United States and Israel have waged war in Gaza, the West Bank, Lebanon, Syria, Yemen, and Iran. The combined death toll across the region runs into the tens of thousands. In Gaza, more than 72,000 Palestinians have been killed and the territory's hospitals, universities, and civilian infrastructure systematically destroyed. In Lebanon, 1,739 people have been killed since the latest Israeli onslaught began on March 2nd, with nearly 1 million displaced. In Iran, the U.S.-based human rights activist news agency HRANA has documented 3,636 killed since February 28th, including 1,701 civilians. Millions have fled their homes. The 5-week U.S. bombing campaign has cost American taxpayers at least $45 billion, with 13 service members killed and nearly 370 wounded. The Strait of Hormuz remained effectively shut on Thursday. The New York Times reported that only a handful of vessels had crossed since the truce began, with ship owners, insurers, and others wary of safe passage. In Washington, the ceasefire produced sharp divisions. Significant sections of the U.S. political establishment argued that the United States had agreed to pause military operations before achieving any of its stated strategic objectives. Iran had not dismantled its nuclear program, the Strait of Hormuz remained under Iranian control, Hezbollah had not been disarmed. The Washington Post editorial board published a column Wednesday headlined, "Ahead of Iran talks in Pakistan, a bad deal is worse than no deal." The Post argued that, quote, "the Trump administration negotiates knowing that the Islamic Republic stands to lose more from the war resuming than Washington does," end quote. It noted that, quote, "this war killed dozens of Iran's top leaders, but the regime remains intact," end quote, and warned that Iran's, quote, "goal will be to string out negotiations as long as possible so they can regroup and rebuild," end quote. Its conclusion, quote, "the desire to seek a settlement is understandable, but no deal is better than a bad one," end quote. The Wall Street Journal editorial board struck a similar note Wednesday in a piece headlined, Trump Declares Premature Victory in Iran. The board warned that, quote, the unfortunate truth is that Mr. Trump put himself in this position, end quote, through, quote, inconsistent rhetoric on the war, claims of victory amid threats of unleashing hell, end quote. Its objection was not that threatening to destroy a civilization is a crime, but that it, quote, raised global fears and undermined support at home and abroad, end quote. If Iran plays, quote, its usual games, end quote, the journal counseled Trump must, quote, finish the job, end quote. Democratic Senator Chris Murphy told CNN Wednesday that if Iran retains permanent control of the strait, quote, then what an error, what a miscalculation this entire endeavor was, end quote. Trump, for his part, threatened further military escalation. In a post on Truth Social, he declared that, quote, all U.S. ships, aircraft, and military personnel will remain in place and around Iran until such time as the real agreement reached is fully complied with, end quote. He warned that if the terms are not honored, quote, the shooting starts bigger and better and stronger than anyone has ever seen before, end quote. He concluded, quote, in the meantime, our great military is loading up and resting, looking forward actually to its next conquest, end quote. He signed off, quote, America is back, end quote. On Wednesday, Trump met with NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte at the White House. Politico reported that Trump berated Rutte over NATO's refusal to provide airspace and military bases for the U.S. war on Iran. Trump called the alliance, quote-unquote, very disappointing and demanded that NATO allies send warships to reopen the Strait of Hormuz within days. On Thursday, Trump posted on Truth Social, quote, Iran is doing a very poor job, dishonorable, some would say, of allowing oil to go through the Strait of Hormuz. That is not the agreement we have, end quote. Trump's Selective Service filing prepares for activation of U.S. military draft. By Kevin Reed. When President Trump signed the 2026 National Defense Authorization Act, NDAA, into law last December, with critical votes supplied by the Democratic Party, one provision was largely concealed from the American public: the creation of an automatic Selective Service registration system for all men aged 18 to 26, tied directly to state and federal databases, was barely discussed. Now, under conditions of the widening U.S.-Israeli war in the Middle East and future wars being prepared by U.S. imperialism, the 2026 NDAA has a ready-made mechanism for conscription that can be activated by a directive from the fascist in the White House. A filing by the Trump administration to the Office of Information and Regularity Affairs on March 30th has confirmed both the operational readiness of the system and the administration's long-term strategy to prepare for a generation of imperial wars fought by working-class soldiers. Under the NDAA provision, the Selective Service System, SSS, will automatically register all males between 18 and 26 using existing data streams from state motor vehicle departments, educational institutions, and federal tax and immigration agencies. The measure replaces the voluntary mail-in or online registration systems previously implemented by the Selective Service Act going back to 1980 and the administration of Jimmy Carter. According to the Defense Department's implementation memo, every state will transmit periodic data batches to the SSS, which will then cross-reference them with federal identifiers such as social security numbers, driver's licenses, and immigration status. This infrastructure allows the government to instantly generate a comprehensive and continuously updated list of draft-eligible individuals. Notifications and classification statuses would be delivered electronically through federal and state portals, while appeals or deferment requests may be filed online through a centralized system. Framed by the Trump administration as a quote-unquote modernization of the draft infrastructure, officials claim the process will, quote, reduce administrative burden, end quote, and, quote, increase equity and compliance, end quote. However, the main goal is to eliminate non-registration, centralize control, and ensure readiness for immediate mobilization once a national emergency requires the draft. Once the draft is activated, the SSS is expected to employ a randomized lottery system like the one used during the Vietnam War, drawing birth dates to determine the order of induction. If selected, registrants would undergo a rapid screening and assignment process, with deferment still possible. Analysts, however, have emphasized that such exemptions are likely to be narrowly defined given the scale of U.S. military needs. The administration's latest filing to Congress, submitted alongside the Presidential War Powers Report, ties the Selective Service infrastructure directly to the conflict in Iran. While Pentagon spokespeople claim the deployment is quote-unquote limited and Trump has announced a two-week ceasefire with Iran, internal memos leaked to the press acknowledge that military planners foresee a massive ground occupation as the only way to achieve Washington's stated objectives. The scale of U.S. casualties in the initial months of the war against Iran has already sparked renewed discussion in Washington about manpower shortages and the exhaustion of volunteer enlistments. Recruitment has plummeted for the third straight year, forcing the administration to expand eligibility criteria and reopen previously closed avenues of enlistment. The lies provided by the U.S. government justifying the wars launched over the past three decades, from the false claims about yellow cake uranium prior to the invasion of Iraq in 2003, to the obviously made-up claim by Trump that Iran was, quote-unquote, weeks away from having a nuclear weapon, have no doubt played a role in the decreasing numbers of enlistments to the all-volunteer U.S. Army. Strategists within the National Security Council have spoken bluntly about the draft plan. Quote, Iran is not the end, end quote, one senior defense official told Politico in March. Quote, it's the first test of a broader geopolitical reorientation. We are rebuilding the capacity to project power simultaneously in multiple theaters, Eurasia, the Pacific, and the Middle East, end quote. Behind this language is the unmistakable logic of international imperialist war for markets and resources. The NDAA provision also mandates that automatic registration will apply to lawful permanent residents, asylum seekers, deferred action, DACA recipients, and undocumented immigrants identified through state or federal data. While Trump and his fascist and xenophobic supporters have vilified undocumented immigrants as a national threat and unleashed violence, detention, and death upon them, the new SSS system shows that those same quote-unquote illegal immigrants will be compelled to serve and die alongside American youth in U.S. wars of conquest. By linking data from the Department of Homeland Security, ICE, and state records, the administration ensures that all young men residing within the U.S. borders, regardless of their immigration status, will be entered into the federal registry. Now, the immigrant workers will not only face deportation and being hauled off to concentration camps in El Salvador or elsewhere. They will also be forced onto the battlefields to die for the interests of the American financial oligarchy. Pentagon attorneys have privately acknowledged that these provisions of the 2026 NDAA will present legal challenges under equal protection and data privacy laws. However, the U.S. Defense Department, under the direction of Secretary of War Pete Hegseth, views this population as an essential reserve of manpower to be expended under the barbaric warrior ethos mantra. Additionally, with a new waiver system that permits recruits with a single prior conviction for marijuana possession or drug paraphernalia, previously grounds for disqualification, the administration has significantly widened the pool of eligible conscripts for its bloody plans. The system's reliance on state-level data also contradicts local laws. Several states, including California and New York, maintain strict privacy laws governing the use and transmission of resident data to federal agencies. By demanding direct data pipelines to the Selective Service System, the Trump administration's new plan seeks to override these restrictions. A coalition of state attorneys general has filed a complaint asserting that the White House order exceeds federal authority and violates the 10th Amendment, which reserves certain powers to the states. Immigration advocates have also said that funneling personal information through military and law enforcement databases could expose millions of non-citizens to deportation or surveillance. Quote, "At its core, this is about control," end quote, said a data security expert at Georgetown Law. Quote, "Once state data is linked to federal systems for conscription, it opens the door to mass data sharing across agencies, ICE, DHS, FBI, all justified in the name of national security," end quote. Along the Selective Service overhaul, Trump's Pentagon also quietly raised the maximum enlistment age from 35 to 42, a change that was made public only in an internal directive earlier this year. Defense officials have said the adjustment is about, quote, "greater longevity and fitness levels," end quote, but the underlying motivation is obvious. The wars the U.S. is now fighting require many more soldiers. The volunteer army has long faced a crisis of recruitment amid stagnant pay, poor conditions, and widespread public distrust of government motives. The enlistment age increase widens the conscription base to include millions of older working-class men, those who are struggling with income instability, medical and college loan debt, or unstable employment, and for whom military service may be seen as the only path out of a crisis. The reactivation of the draft shows that the global strategic aims of the Trump administration require the mobilization of the youth to fight and die in its wars of aggression and conquest. This is a central component of the drive by U.S. imperialism to turn the clock back and abolish the gains by the working class in the 20th century. For these articles and more, visit the World Socialist website at wsws.org. For the World Socialist website, this has been Jesse Thomas.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.